The war in Ukraine is shaping a new global order. As the fighting escalates, global powers are said to be considering their future options. But what will the foundations of this new order be? And will Western values still prevail? This is Inside Story. Hello there and welcome to the programme. I'm Nick Clark. The new war in Europe has been described as a turning point in human history, comparable to the attacks of 9/11 or indeed the fall of the Berlin Wall. It's been more than a month since Russia invaded Ukraine, causing death and destruction across much of the country. The invasion and the political disputes around it are disrupting the global order, which had been in place since the end of the Cold War. The conflict is also defining how democracies will confront future threats and conflicts. Western powers view the invasion not just as an assault on Ukraine's sovereignty, but, in the words of the UK Foreign Secretary Liz Truss, an assault on the foundations and rules by which societies coexist. While the United States and its allies want to bar Russia from one of the world's most important economic blocs, the G20, its members represent 85% of global output, 75% of international trade, and two-thirds of the world's population. China says the G20 is a forum to discuss economic issues and is rejecting suggestions that Moscow could be barred because of its invasion of Ukraine. Well, Qatar's Emir Sheikh Tamim bin Hamad Al Thani spoke at the Doha Forum on Saturday, and in his remarks, he addressed the need to find peaceful solutions to global conflicts.
It is sorrowful to see a contraction in the political and diplomatic means in favour of military expansion and armed solutions. The militarization of solutions has been growing for the last four decades until it reached one of its most challenging peaks in the Ukrainian war. From here, I emphasize the firm position of the state of Qatar on the renunciation of violence, intimidating civilians, and assaulting state sovereignty and all other acts that may constitute a violation of human values and international law. We stand in solidarity with millions of innocent people and refugees who've been victimized by this unjust war and geopolitical calculations.
As for China, well, it could stand to win further influence and economic dominance while the West maintains its pressure on Russia. For now, Beijing seems to be backing diplomatic efforts. The Chinese Foreign Ministry says Ukraine has asked for help in finding a peaceful solution. Meanwhile, Beijing's economy is being hurt by rising commodity prices as a result of the war. All right, let's bring in our guests. In New Haven, in Connecticut, we have Nizar Masari, who's a visiting professor at Yale University. In Oslo, Glenn Deason, who's a professor of international relations at the University of Southeastern Norway. And in Nottingham, in the UK, Steve Tsang, who's director of the China Institute at SOAS University of London. Gentlemen, a warm welcome to you all. And Steve Tsang, I'd like to start with you. We look back, don't we, at the years leading to the First World War and wonder how it was possible that they didn't know the direction in which they were heading. Is that how history, do you think, will view this moment in time as this earthquake rumbles under the current world order?
I think we have better recognition of the importance of the Russian invasion of Ukraine. This is one of those events in history which is going to leave a major mark. I think we are looking at a fall of Berlin Wall in reverse kind of moment here. And I think there's recognition of that.
And Glenn Deason, do you think it's now inevitable that the international order will reposition itself?
I think most definitely, not just international order, but in Europe as well. Keep in mind that for the past 30 years, we kind of tried to figure out what to do with Europe because we never really eliminated the dividing lines in Europe. But now these will be remilitarized as during the Cold War, and the economies between Europe and Russia also be decoupled. So I think that also globalization, as we've known it, is now officially over. I think especially some of it's because of the sanctions against Russia as well. I mean, after the West seized the money from the Russian central bank, this is after doing seizing similar money from Afghanistan, Iran, Venezuela, I think that the world is becoming much more skeptical of both the dollar and the euro. So I think the Russians, of course, they no longer want to trade in this dollars or euros. And we see that the rest of the world are kind of responding to this. The Indians are now wanting to buy energy in rupees. The Saudis are now considering to sell their energy in the Chinese also in their ones. And also, instead of sanctioning Russia, we see countries like China stating that they're willing to work now to establish some kind of a parallel economic financial infrastructure that's not vulnerable to Western sanctions. So I think this is definitely a huge shift in international system. It also displays how the West or NATO and the rest of the world aren't necessarily on the same page.
All right, we'll get into the whys and wherefores of all of that in just a moment. But Nizar, first of all, Nizar Massari, do you think we were inexorably leading to this moment? We had a series of events going back to the Twin Towers in 9/11, to the financial meltdown in 2008, to Brexit, to Trump, and now this. Do you think it's been a gradual progression that's been building up to this moment?
The gradual progression depends on the focus we give it. I think that this focus we're giving it, but I think that there is another focus, the growth of China and the pivot to the Pacific. And there is, so what I notice in today's news and in today's analysis is that people who are reminiscent from the Cold War are reviving the tensions and the hecticness of the years of the Cold War and bringing Russia as the main focus of international relations. Whereas if we look at from a broader picture, the shift is definitely towards the Pacific. The shift is towards a competition between West led by the US and China and its allies. So I see here Russia more as a satellite, not just a small satellite, but an important satellite, but more as a satellite of China than really the main player. And I'm amazed at how many analyses are focusing on Russia as if the main topic is Russia. So and I think that the second point I want to make is that if we keep when we keep focusing our attentions in international relations to relations among states, we forget that some people are paying the price, and it's individuals, it's communities that are really paying the high price of this shift in power. So it's the Ukrainians themselves, but it's people in around the world who are who with the energy prices going up, with the wheat prices going up, and this is provoking a lot of concern among a lot of people in the world, not only about Ukraine, but about the survival of individuals on top of the refugee crisis. So we need to bring our attention, not only to focus our attention, not only on state-to-state relations, but also on the impact of these on real people, real individuals.
So you mean individuals in the sense of, you know, rising commodity prices and so forth, do you?
Rising commodity prices, the refugee crisis, the tremendous refugee crisis mm-hmm. that the Ukrainians are living today, but that the Syrians live, that the Yemenis are still going through, and the Afghans went through and are still going through it. So there are tremendous refugee crises around the world on top of the commodity prices that you mentioned.
The German Chancellor, Olaf Scholz, he said that we're at a turning point and it could lead in any different direction. Steve Sanger, which path do you foresee it going down? Do you agree with the view that China could be the big strategic winner out of all of this?
I don't know whether China is going to be the big strategic winner out of this. But China is the really big player in the picture or at the moment, slightly our focus, but it is going to become the focus of attention as the war in Ukraine settles down. At the moment, with the war unfolding and the future uncertain, there is a lot of thinking about the end game being focused on what will happen to Ukraine and to Russia. But as the war entrenches itself and drags on, there will be much more attention being staged to the wider contextualized idea of an end game, which is what do so-called the West want to see the world move forward. A very important parallel between Russia and Ukraine, Putin's view of Ukraine in terms of history, and China and Taiwan, and Xi Jinping's equally delusional view of Taiwan, is that we know perhaps 10, 15 years down the line, China will invade Taiwan. What will the West do? I think that is going to be much more the focus in the next few years moving forward. And when that stays in focus, the whole engagement of the world order will change. I don't think we're going to see a return to the old Cold War, but we are going to see a new kind, a new version of the bifurcation of the world. The Chinese government doesn't actually want that. And that's why I start off by saying I'm not really sure the Chinese end up being the winner.
Right. So when you say that nations will be looking ahead to this, what you say is an inevitable invasion of Taiwan by China, they will prepare for that moment by continuing this decoupling of the West from China. Is that what you mean?
Yes, in general terms, because at the moment, the West, I mean, here the West means not just Europe and North America, but the democracies more generally, can sanction Russia in the way that we have done at a cost that is significant but tolerable to us. In the same situation between Taiwan and China, we cannot afford to do what we are doing to Russia, to China. Our economy will suffer much too much of a damage. So there will be recalibrating of what would be a safe level of economic engagement with China. And the Chinese government has long had a policy of decoupling from the West. It goes all the way back to 2013, when Xi Jinping issued document number 9, which was essentially an internal document declaring how China should be very selectively decoupling from the West.
Okay. It's certainly true, isn't it, that the world could not apply sanctions on China in the way that it has with Russia, because it relies on its trade far too much just to keep the world turning.
Definitely. So obviously, a complete decoupling from China would not be possible. It would simply destroy the global economy. However, that being said, you do have the issue of certain degrees. For example, the question is not only of decoupling, it's having a favorable symmetry. That means from the US perspective, they would like to see themselves and the Europeans be less dependent on China. But China should be more dependent on the West. So in other words, skew the symmetry of dependence. Now, but you can do this to certain degrees. And again, from the United States perspective, for many years now, they've been attempting to instill some block discipline to prevent the Europeans from buying Russian energy, buying Chinese technologies, and instead only link themselves to the United States. And obviously, this is possible to some extent. And I think this is also why the U.S. now is trying to go after China to some extent, claiming that they're supporting Russia and the invasion of Ukraine because the Europeans have completely jumped on the U.S. bandwagon in terms of putting these harsh sanctions against Russia to the extent that it's creating havoc for European economies. However, by attempting to also blame and shift blame towards the Chinese, I think the U.S. also would like to use this crisis as a way of having the Europeans also decouple a little bit from the Chinese. Again, this has been one of the key problems of the United States. They have the Europeans, have always had security dependence on the US, but they've had a very hard time to convert the security dependence into economic loyalty. But now with these heightened security threats, we see the US obviously has more influence over the Europeans. So they will definitely exploit this crisis to the extent that they can get the Europeans from not only cut off from the Russians, but obviously also the Chinese, but not completely, obviously, because that's sure. not possible.
Sure. And Niza, so are we saying that this is the end of globalization, that the world will now divide into separate, potentially hostile camps, regardless of what happens in Ukraine?
Yes and no, because I would like to call our attention to the fact that many of the countries that either didn't vote or abstained in the General Assembly on the resolution condemning the invasion.
And they represent a significant proportion of the world's population, right?
Well, a significant part of the world population, but it was also a significant number of countries from the African continent and from Asia. And those countries that somehow coincidentally were part of 1956 and Bandung. So these countries are saying, look, these are two big dogs fighting, and what is in it for us in this fight? So this is not our fight. We have other issues. We have other demands. And so this is going to redefine world politics, and these countries will have somehow to choose sides, even during the Cold War and at the height of the Third World, the non-aligned movement, many of those countries were siding slightly with one side or the other, but they had another argument. They were saying our fight is another one and our issues are different. And I think that these same countries are saying the same thing when they are thinking the same thing, where they're looking at this fight between these two big dogs under US leadership and currently under Russian leadership, but it's Russia, China, the two challenging powers, challenging the status quo power of the United States. So this is what most of the world is seeing, I think.
Nizar, is it necessarily a bad thing that the world order is reshaped?
Not a bad thing, but there were good things in the post Cold War order. The norms and the values imposed by the West with the advance of democracy and of human rights and the protection of minorities, all of these things are very important, very valuable. And people from the social forum in Porto Alegre that were protesting against Davos, they wanted globalization, but the globalization of these norms and these values for protecting minorities and human rights and democracy, the advance of democracy and its values and freedom of speech and freedom of faith. So those were very positive values that a lot of people will miss if they have to choose camps and they have to choose sides, and there is a side that is more authoritarian and more unwilling to be observing human rights and the rights of minorities. So that is a negative point in this change that will happen inevitably very soon.
Glenn, is it possible that some good will come out of this? There's an opportunity, in fact, here to create a more united, more interconnected and perhaps more sustainable trading world.
I think so, because, we have to see that this is kind of transition from the unipolar to a multipolar world. So after after the Cold War, there was only one center of power, which was the United States, and organized around the collective West. Now, the West has been in relative decline for the past 30 years in terms of other centers of power coming up, but the U.S. has never really been able to let go of its key security strategy, which is global hegemony. So the question was always, how would the multipolar system come into place? Would it be through negotiated settlement, or would it be through conflict, through war? And this is also, well, the crisis in Ukraine has kind of been a question of this as well. How do we transition? Would we find a way to live on the same continent as the Russians? And it turned out no. And I think the same applies to other centers of the world. But I think some positive can possibly come out of this, because I don't see the world switching into hostile camps. I think with the decline of the U.S. hegemon, I think there's more, this becomes less zero-sum game perhaps around the world. And as we see, these are not all conflicting camps. And again, despite all this talk about Russia being isolated in the world, the reality is pretty much there's only the NATO countries plus Japan, Australia, who has put sanctions on Russia. So if we see the Chinese, Indians, well, the rest of the world, they don't support the Russian invasion, as this is an illegal war, violation of international law, so they haven't picked Russia's side. but also they see this largely as a NATO-Russia proxy war in Ukraine. So they don't want to pick any sides. And obviously, most of the world, I would assume, also don't really see any moral authority on the side of NATO after all of our wars through this past decades with the hundreds of thousands of dead. So I think the world is will start to organize more into the different poles of power. And once this could have a beneficial impact on this zero-sum game, which tend to play.
Right. Let me put the same question to Steve. Do you think that there could be a positive result out of all this misery?
In principle, there could always be. But in reality, I think the world has become a much more dangerous place. And the direction of travel that the world was on has been changed. I think it's easy to simply look at the post-Cold War era as a time where it was about Americans' dominance. I think we should really see it in a much wider context. It was also an era when the European Union was changing, or for at least until now, changing the way how we look at ourselves and our relationship with other nations. The idea that in Europe, a war like what we are seeing in Ukraine today could not happen. It was wonderful while it lasts. It was an idea that until the invasion was having effect beyond Europe to spread the idea that the world needs to move on and cannot stay in the mindset of the 19th or the 20th century. Now, in the end, this more idealistic going beyond nationalism aspirations of the European Union has been burst as a bubble by the Russian invasion. And this, I think, has changed the world. And we are drifting into a bifurcated world, whether we like it or not. And whether the Chinese like it or not, they don't. They want to have a united world where China ultimately will become the dominant power. But that's not going to happen.
Right. And let me just move it on.
Get a lot more
Steve, confidence. Sorry to jump in because we're just coming towards the end of the program. I just want to bring in Nizar one last time. I mean, I hate to end on a you know, bad note, but Steve's right, isn't he? Because stability between great powers depends on reaching some kind of mutual agreement to maintain the status quo. And that clearly, moving forwards, at least in the near to middle term, is going to be impossible with Russia, isn't it?
It is going to be difficult because the rising power, China, is going to challenge more and more the United States and the order it established after the end of the Cold War. So this is the moment of this shifting and of this negotiation. But we are not going to see an immediate clash of military might between these two superpowers, but it might eventually come a little bit later. Just one caveat towards the last statement. I think that Europe went through a period of peace after the end of the Cold War, but during that period of peace, we had the wars in Bosnia, the war in Kosovo, we had Georgia, we had the first invasion of Ukraine and Crimea. So this period was not that peaceful and that calm in Europe either. So that was the only slight disagreement I wanted to
say. Sure. All right, we'll have to leave it there. Thanks very much indeed, gentlemen, for joining us today. Nizar Massari, Glenn Deason, and Steve Tsang. Thanks very much indeed for joining us for this interesting discussion. And thank you, too, for watching. You can see this program again anytime by visiting our website, aljazeera.com. And indeed, for further discussion, just go to our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/AJ Inside Story. And you can also join the conversation on Twitter. Our handle is @AJ Inside Story. From me, Nick Clark, and the entire team here in Doha, it's goodbye for now.